You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. Today on Work in Progress, we're going to talk about the state of manufacturing and particularly talent and what kind of jobs are needed in the roles in this industry. Joining me to discuss this is Carolyn Lee, President and Executive Director of the Manufacturing Institute. Carolyn, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ramona.
As always, I love to check in with you to find out what is going on in manufacturing. Right now, I feel like there is an upsurge. It has been happening for the last couple of years. Tell me where we are.
That's a great question and great way to frame the conversation. So we are at an all-time high since the Great Recession with manufacturing, with jobs filled here in the sector. We are just hovering at 13 million, and that means we have recovered from all the jobs that were originally lost during the Great Recession. And now we have gone back up all the way to the top of the mountain, but we still have almost 600,000 open jobs about every month. So JOLTS just came out recently from the Department of Labor, and we have 583,000 open jobs last month in the sector. And the churn has slowed down, so people are coming and staying, but we have so many jobs still to fill. So if we were able to fill all of those, we'd be well over 13.5 million jobs. And so for us, it is a very busy time, and we're looking to bring more people into high-paying, family-supporting manufacturing jobs.
Now, we're talking about the U.S. manufacturing industry. So what kind of sectors are you seeing? Where are the jobs being created?
It's everything. I mean, you read a lot in the paper because of the CHIPS Act. You'll read a lot about semiconductor investment, of course, and that is because there are several huge investments, new builds that are underway, and those are all in the construction phase. But we have investment across the whole breadth of manufacturing. So why we say to people that no matter what you're interested in, whether it's consumer products or auto manufacturing or electric vehicles or aerospace and, you name it, you pick it, there is a role open in manufacturing. And while 49% of manufacturing jobs are pretty much are production jobs, the rest run the gamut. We need finance and accounting and marketing and HR professionals, all of the things that make our businesses run. Of course, there's a huge need for shipping and logistics personnel too. But we have really, there's something for everybody here.
So for the Infrastructure and Jobs Act and the CHIPS Act, these are federally funded programs that are coming into communities and they're helping them say, okay, we're going to bring jobs back here. And it was a bipartisan bill. And so it's in every community. Is there any part of the country that's seeing this more than others? Because just to say, we thought of the Midwest as that manufacturing belt for such a long time. Is there one part of the country where we're seeing this resurgence?
I mean, for the CHIPS Act, there have been huge announcements of investment, of course, from Intel in Ohio. You have large investments being made in Texas, and then a number of very large investments in Arizona as well. And that's just specific to chips. But when you also look at, if you look at EV, there's, huge investments in Kansas and in Alabama and in Georgia and the Southeast. So really, there's some variety in what kind of investment is happening all over the country. But not only has it been CHIPS and infrastructure bill that have driven a lot of government funding, there is a huge grants program out of the Department of Commerce, the Good Jobs Act, which came from a previous set of legislation that helped invest in job training. That's something the Manufacturing Institute team has been working on in a number of regions, including Fresno, California, and Ohio and Texas. But it is really that across the country, we've seen an investment in manufacturing facilities. Manufacturing construction is up, and that dates all the way back to post-pandemic. There's been a lot of onshoring and nearshoring that went on because we had this huge supply chain disruption. And so a lot of investment is coming into the country. And then that comes on the heels of comprehensive tax reform back in 2017 that then became enacted. And then, the drumbeat kept building. And then you had infrastructure and the CHIPS Act and several other pieces of legislation. But so as much as there's been a public policy drive to support investment in manufacturing, the sector itself has been investing and bringing back. And that's helped by having a favorable business climate, with consumers in the U.S. is still spending money, and the U.S. has been relatively strong for an economy since COVID. But it is a blend of things, because all of that investment can only happen if the supports are there and you don't have too many headwinds from the government. So government can, of course, always be a help or a hindrance. And that's what, you know, we have to make sure that we are investing. But for the Manufacturing Institute, we are focused on the jobs and the workers and the skills and making sure we're set, because with all this construction, we're going to need to make sure we're filling the roles that will come with these new facilities.
A new study from the Manufacturing Institute and Deloitte says that this kind of resurgence and boom is going to create a lot of jobs. Tell me what the forecast is for that.
That's right. So the MI just released with Deloitte our sixth talent study. And what we found in this year's update is that in the next 10 years, the U.S. will need to fill 3.8 million manufacturing jobs. And now remember what I said earlier, this is coming on top of a high in manufacturing positions since 2008. So we're going to need to fill another 3.8 million jobs. Now, some of them will be because of people retiring, but a large number of them is because of the growth in the industry. So of that 3.8 million, about half are expected to go unfilled unless we're able to find new talent pools. And our challenge on talent has been we don't have the people and the people with the skills. So it's really incumbent upon organizations and manufacturers and entities like the Manufacturing Institute to help make sure we're developing new talent pools with the skills we need for modern manufacturing.
And what kind of skills are we looking at? Because you and I have talked about this, and it's not new, that the image of factories still, I think, in a lot of people's minds tend to look like, you know, the old dark, working on the line only. Now, there are hands-on jobs that you have to do, but a lot of the skills you need are more digital, more software. Tell me about those roles.
Absolutely. And that is what modern manufacturing looks like, right? It is digital. It is digitally enabled. You walk up to a machine and it is enclosed. If you walk up to a CNC machine, it is enclosed and all the hydraulic liquids are inside. Not like many of the conversations we've had, Ramona, where in years and past that it looked different. And it's all digitally enabled. So we have connected factories. We have a 4.0 real time here in the sector. And so it is about those digital skills and capabilities. We need data scientists and computer scientists, just as people say, oh, if you have those skills, you're going to go in the tech sector. Well, a lot of the tech sector is the manufacturing sector, I would argue. But also we need those skills in industrial manufacturing, because that is how we're operating our facilities today. So in addition to those, we also need industrial maintenance technicians. The modern technology that is in manufacturing today cannot operate unless you have those high in-demand maintenance technicians. And the MI is really fortunate to now operate and be expanding the Federation for Advanced Manufacturing Education, the FAME multi-skilled maintenance technician apprenticeship program founded by Toyota that we've now been running since 2019. So, you know, we need those advanced maintenance skills, those 4.0 skills. We also need to have, software developers and other engineers and logisticians. Nothing works in a connected economy unless we have those really, really high in demand logisticians that are helping us on the logistics side get everything where it needs to be. Not only the finished product, but all of your inputs too.
I promise next time we talk, I will not bring up the old school view of manufacturing, because we've been past that for so long. And I do think it's still stuck in people's brains, but I'm never going to bring it up again. But actually, to that point, are you having any trouble recruiting people? What is the steps out there to recruit? And then we could talk about training in a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we still are we do have a perception issue with the industry. It has gotten better. I hate to say a silver lining of COVID, because it had such a devastating impact in the U.S. But one thing that came from COVID was that people, the general public, understood the essential nature of manufacturing. Manufacturing facilities were open for the most part. Even at the very beginning, when many closures were happening, manufacturing needed to stay open because we were making things that were essential to the response effort, to making sure that we had all the consumer needs that filled, you know, the toilet paper supply chain. That was a hot topic a couple of years ago, just around this time, actually. And so manufacturing jobs have increased in perception. The value of manufacturing has increased in perception among the public because of that experience and the essential nature of the sector. So that helped. But we still need to have people understand what goes on in those giant buildings that are way back from the road and perhaps in more rural areas. And that's why we have to do career awareness events. That's why the NAM and the MI have run for the last several years our Creators Wanted campaign to really change the perception of the industry and have people, particularly young people, see that there's a place for you in manufacturing to be creative and to solve problems and to work with teams to solve a bigger thing, right? To come together. But it's also about things like MFG Day, which we've been talking about for a long time now. And then it's about career pathways. How do we help people see that once they have that spark of like, oh, this is exciting and interesting, but that, what do you do? Well, here's your earn and learn program. Here's your apprenticeship program. Here is your short course of skills that you can obtain locally that will set you on a path for manufacturing careers. And that once you're inside, and this was something we got to in the paper with Deloitte, you know, once you're in a career, that there's career progression for you and that you can continue to learn skills that will help you build a full-time career, a lifelong career, with lifelong learning that's going to help you do things that are cool and exciting and interesting every day.
One of the points of your study, and also I think it is part of the DNA of the Manufacturing Institute already and the industry, is that the employers themselves have to be that bridge to a talent pipeline, right? I guess you can say. So how do you want them to go about this? What are your recommendations?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I was really pleased to see in the paper that 9 out of 10 manufacturers that we surveyed for the paper with Deloitte indicated that they are working to form at least one partnership to improve job attraction and retention. And actually, on average, they're partnering with 4 or more. You know, I mentioned FAME, the apprenticeship program, a few minutes ago. And FAME is an employer-centric model. It was created by Toyota because they realized they had a need for multi-skilled maintenance technicians that wasn't being filled by their local community college. So they built out a program that filled their need. They went to their local education partner and said, hey, if we build this, this is what we need. Will you partner with us? And then they realized in order to fill the class and keep enough classes going into the future for the college to make that investment, they brought in other employers and it became a multi-employer local effort to build this. And then the business community locally also came behind. And we took it on, and that's what we're expanding across the country. We've doubled the size of FAME since we began leading it in 2019. And what that does is put the employer in the middle. So you can have a whole consortium of employers, and they don't all need to be the size of a Toyota, who's been a great leader, but they're a huge company. You can have small and medium-sized manufacturers come to the table and say, I'm going to participate in the local FAME chapter, but I only need 2 people every 2 years. And so that's what they do. That's who they support and they sponsor. But they, because they're pooling the effort with other local companies, they're able to support an entire cohort at a community college. So it's things like that where manufacturers are being creative and joining, you know, proven models like FAME or starting up new local consortiums for things like second chance hiring, where you're hiring folks who are coming out of the criminal justice or having had criminal justice system exposure. And you're saying, okay, how can we come together to build the talent pipelines we need here locally? Because every business has their own, you know, flavor, and every region has their own specific challenge that they're trying to overcome. Companies are taking it into their own hands because we can no longer wait that at the end of the education system, students are coming out with all the skills that we need. Now, we need to do a better job of, and this is work is underway, to make sure that K-12 education understands the need of modern manufacturing, but we also need to help shape those individuals and the skill and those people with the skills so that they can fill these high paying, you know, family supporting jobs.
I think the idea that if you start in K-12 and tell people that if you have a spark for something, if you have an interest in something, it doesn't have to be the hands-on drill press or, you know, like the parts line. If you're interested in STEM, there's a role for you, an important role for you in manufacturing. And getting that message to kids is, I think, crucial if you're going to keep building this pipeline that you need.
That's right. You know, I see some of the engagement activities that are in schools today, and I think, God, I wish they had this when I was a kid. You know, maybe I would have found a different career path. I love what I do. But, you know, it is exciting to see the hands-on learning, the project-based learning, the exposure that students have today to understand what engineering and how STEM isn't this thing that lives in a box, you know, in white lab coats. There is that, of course, but it's also, it's the building, it's the taking apart, it's the fixing, it's the problem solving. And that part of it, and it's working with teams and collaborating. And those things spark and excite different individuals. And so bringing that to life is really important, and making sure that our K-12 system, that students see, it's not just, you know, I have preteens and teenagers. And, you know, I don't want that. And they come home and they say, I'm just learning algebra. Well, why? Why are you learning these things? How is that going to be applied in your life? That is what makes it stick for a lot of students. And then that excites them to go on to these careers. And that's why we've got to make sure we're bringing modern manufacturing and the careers and the possibilities into K-12 so that they have those building blocks to be ready for the next step.
And all jobs are local. So
right.
The good part of all of this is if you're manufacturing, if you're an employer in a small, you mentioned rural community, there are opportunities there. And we've talked a lot about this on Working Nation recently, about how the idea of people wanting to stay in their communities, because that's where their homes are, where their families are. But if there's not opportunity, they can't do it. It sounds like manufacturing is poised to create even more opportunity for people to stay where they want to be.
That's right. And, you know, we talk about this, especially when we do things like MFG Day, which, of course, is the first Friday of every October every year, but any day could be Manufacturing Day. And it's really a call for people to open their doors, and manufacturers to open the doors and bring the public in. And, you know, what we've learned over time, whether it's MFG Day or actually our veterans program or Heroes Make America initiative out of the Institute, as we've built up these programs in regions, you know, we went to one place, we were in Texas when we started our Heroes program there, and we had a local partner say to us, there's no manufacturing near Fort Cavazos. And we did a survey and found, no, there's actually, I think it was 100 manufacturers in a 60-mile radius. But people might not know, because it's not always the big OEMs, it's small and medium-sized businesses, you know, 50-person shops, essential part of that supply chain. And there's a role. There are always roles available and open. So what we need to do in our sector is make sure that we're highlighting that we are here. And manufacturers are doing that more and more. But it's how do you make sure that there's visibility for the companies that are small and medium sized, that are not the name brands, what those roles and opportunities are, because then you can attract those folks locally who are saying, I do want to stay here. I do, you know, you're coming out of high school. I want to make my future here in this community, but you don't know where to go. How do we elevate these jobs to make sure that they know that there's a chance and opportunity for them locally?
And we've talked about K-12 or community college level, but there are people who maybe have lived in a community for a while, so mid-career workers. Mm-hmm. Maybe the particular business that they have worked at shut down, or maybe they've gone to a couple of different jobs, or maybe they want to move back. So what kind of help can be out there for that mid-career worker, that older worker, who right. really wants to find that good-paying job?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, that's a huge need. It's easy to say, okay, we're just going to recruit from the just out of school population. There's a huge segment of the population that's either underemployed or unemployed or reemerging into the workforce. I mentioned second chance. That's one population. 1 in 4 Americans have had exposure to the criminal justice system in their history that might then prevent them from getting a good, durable job and having a family supporting pathway. And so we've got to break down barriers to that. But you also have folks who are underemployed, who perhaps came out of a skilling program with a skill set that they're not using in their sector. How do we make sure that we're able to translate those skills in? The Institute's been working with the support of Walmart for the last several years with some other partners to build a military readiness badging system so we can take and translate all the skills that you've earned in the military because of your time in service and translate that to manufacturing certifications so we could tap into the talent pool not only of those transitioning out, but those who are already fully separated veterans who are out in the economy and perhaps underemployed because they weren't able to say, I did all of this in my time in service, and this is what it means in today's economy. So we're working to fix that. And then Walmart, I know, is looking to take that model and expand it across the broader economy, and we're excited to be a partner in that. But, you know, as we look at this, how do we tap into these talent pools? How do we make sure that perhaps a parent who stopped working to be able to care for young children, how do they reemerge into the sector? How do we make sure that they have the pathway in, the translation of their previous skills and experience, but also how do you help them with a short course of training, perhaps a certification or a certificate that will let them have that skill that's needed today? And so that's where our local community and technical schools and all those institutions are key partners, and manufacturers are working with them to make sure that the skills are dialed in. And that's a lot of the work that we do across the country. And, you know, we talked about this during COVID, when a lot of hospitality and service sector jobs shut down because, of course, there were a lot less people weren't out and about during part of the pandemic. How do you translate some of those customer service jobs? You know, we have customer service jobs in manufacturing. You have to work with your clients to make sure they're getting what they need. We have shipping and logistics. We have, you know, the marketing support and all of the other things that go into jobs that you think about in hospitality and service sector. So for us, not that we want to poach from the entire economy, but we want to make sure that people see that there's applicability of their skills over into manufacturing. And so for manufacturers, when we're hiring, we need to look at skills, not just degrees, and look at what the skills are and break down the jobs into skill buckets so that you can say, oh, wait, this person has that skill from something else and it is applicable here. And that is work that we're doing, because that's going to help, you know, lower barriers and bring people in.
Let's talk directly to that job seeker right now, that worker. Tell me why they should be working in manufacturing.
We have the, on average, the highest pay across the economy, and 95% of our jobs have benefits as well. And so it's really important that these are family supporting careers. They're durable. When you make an investment in a manufacturing facility, you're not going to pick it up and move it down the road, you know, 100 miles because you got a better deal down the road. These are durable investments. I talked earlier about all the construction that's going on in the sector. And those are big, huge, multi-billion dollar investments in many cases. And so those jobs are going to be there. So go find out what that industry is. Go talk to your local workforce board or workforce one stop or your local community and technical school and find out. There was a point last summer, I haven't looked at this data recently, but I can tell you that there was a point last summer where the number one opening in manufacturing was actually a forklift operator. You can get a forklift operator certification in about 2 days. And those are certifications that are offered at local community colleges. And so you could get that, find your way in, and then begin to figure out, okay, what am I interested in? Where do I go from here? These are pathways to durable careers. And I will tell you, because my favorite part of my job are all the tours that I get to do of facilities. It is like Disneyland in there. You know, there is so much happening. There is always something new happening. There are exciting, you know, opportunities, and there's constantly that upward progression possibility. And so if you are eager to learn, there is a come in and continue to find your way. And that is really what's possible in that modern manufacturing.
Carolyn, always a pleasure to speak to you.
I always enjoy our conversations, Ramona. I appreciate it and look forward to the next one.
I have been speaking with Carolyn Lee, President and Executive Director of the Manufacturing Institute. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Thank you for listening.